My best practices is I would consider myself leaning heavily towards the engagement side of Instagram. So when I say engagement, I mean I spend way more time interacting with people on Instagram than I do posting.
Hi, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On this weekly show, you can listen in on my conversations with peak-performing business leaders, creatives, and entrepreneurs. Every week, I bring you the latest scoop on what these incredible people do to succeed. Together, we explore how they think, what they do, and what inspires them to push their limits. Remember, if you have a question you'd like me to answer about creative thinking, innovation, or collaboration, head over to isoldat.com/question and ask away. If your question is chosen and you leave your URL, I'll tag you and your business to elevate what you do too. And now, let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. My name is Isolde Trachtenberg. I'm your host, and I'm really happy that you're here. And I'm thrilled to welcome my guest, Lauren V. Davis, is on the show today. And I want you to know a little bit about her before we start talking, because you're going to be blown away by who she is and by all that she's done. Lauren Davis lives in Rockford, Illinois, and works with people all over the world to overcome their personal branding discontent and grow their presence so that they can focus on sales, exposure, leadership, and community impact through her marketing consultancy, Lauren Davis Creative, and her podcast, The Business Event Playbook. And also, she's got a fabulous new kind of social media group on Facebook called Social Media Marketing for Entrepreneurs. So she's doing so much. But when she's not running her two businesses in Rockford, Illinois, the other one is a brick and mortar vinyl record store. And also, it's a lot more. Let's call it what it is. She's traveling the globe, learning and networking at conferences and workshops to better serve her clients with that knowledge. Lauren has a natural and an undying passion to see people and organizations that do good succeed. And I love that. That last part just curls my toes in joy. Lauren, I'm so happy to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here, and I just really appreciate you taking the time to ask me to be on the show, and I can't wait to talk.
I'm so excited. And it's so funny because we have a mutual admiration society, because I'm so grateful. You are one of my teachers right now, especially since I'm working much more in the arena of trying to improve my social media and improve my connections that way. And so having you as a resource is just wonderful. And but before we go there, before we start there, I would love to talk to you to begin with about your very, very early life, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You started babysitting very young. You started working in your parents' bakery very young. You started dog sitting, all of these things. You worked a number of jobs in high school because, like you say, you knew you'd be responsible for a lot of your education. I did too. I had to pay for my college education. And I wanted to ask you, starting with all of that, how did that early entrepreneurial spirit affect and influence who you are today?
So my mom, like you said, I had lots of different jobs. My mom was she had a gourmet dog biscuit bakery. So that's the bakery we're talking about. It's not a bakery for humans, it's a bakery for dogs. My dad was an economic developer. So I feel like business was kind of all around me. Entrepreneurship was all around me, or that entrepreneurial spirit. But yet I also see, every time I see someone post something about their child starting a business or their child having a lemonade stand, I'm just like, I know that kid is going to be an entrepreneur in the future, because it always happens. Entrepreneurs always have stories like this. So my story, even though I'd like to think it's unique, it's not that unique, because so many entrepreneurs have a story where they started really young. But yeah, my first business that I can remember was like painting. I would paint rocks and try to sell them off to my neighbors. It was like paint pictures on them or whatever. But then I started a business where I would collect cans to recycle them. So I'd get money from the recycling, but I'd also have my neighbors pay me to collect their cans for them, because recycling was not as, it wasn't as economical at that time for, private recycling or whatever. It wasn't as economical. So I'd collect them in my wagon and bring them home. And then I'd convince my parents to drive me to the recycling plant. And I think that I even remember just like sitting in the kitchen at the kitchen table with my dad, and we wrote out my business plan on construction paper. And I wish I still had that today, you know, to kind of see what it was, but it made a lot of sense. You know, he showed me like, okay, if you collect this much every week, and you make this much per week, then by the time, you know, it's your birthday next year, you're going to have this much money to do what you would like to do with it. And I think that just seeing it all laid out, it just changed things for me. I knew, like, I was like, okay, I can do this. I can have lemonade stands. I wanted to be the best babysitter at, you know, church or on the block. So I would babysit, and then I would write down my number, and, you know, I'd have posters, and people could go rip off my number off of the poster and take it home with them on the bulletin board.
I love wherever. It.
And so I took CPR classes because I wanted to be the best babysitter there was. So yeah, I just always like had this spirit to like, okay, keep self-improving, keep being the best at whatever it is that you're doing, and work hard and be a good person, and then you'll succeed in life. So that was kind of always my feeling as a child working into my adulthood. And yeah, I didn't apply for loans on time. I didn't get the right loans, and I also didn't want to be in debt forever. And so I thought, you know, college would be, going to a university would be a certain way for me. And then it ended up being that there wasn't really enough money for me to go. So I, you know, worked my butt off trying to save money when I was in, high school, so I could like just kind of save enough to go to community college or just keep going like year by year. And I honestly worked three jobs also because I just love to work. Like I just wanted to keep working. So I worked at an ice cream place and a popular national food place. And then I also worked at a local store in the mall. And I just really enjoyed just being in action and taking action and being the best at what I could do. So yeah, kind of, I guess it all kind of, when you look back, you see the bigger picture, you're like, this all makes sense. This is exactly who you are as a person.
I love that so very much. And it's funny how many parallels we have. I started, my first business was I made paper pencil toppers for my friends. Yeah. Like I'd color them in and they could choose the patterns they wanted them colored in. And then I would roll them up and put them on the pencils for them. And it was 15 cents to 50 cents, depending on how complicated the drawings would be.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And, you know, I was 8 years old and that was my goal. And for me, it was because I'm an immigrant and money was tight. And so there was no money coming in from my parents. So I had to do it myself. And the same, I worked in an ice cream store all through high school. So it's really interesting, that same parallel there too. The thing that I'm wondering though is where do you think that spirit comes from? And do you think people can cultivate that entrepreneurial zing? Or do you think that is something inherent and we're born with it or we're not born with it?
I've asked myself this question a lot, and I don't know if I know the answer, to be completely honest. I don't know if I know the answer, but it does seem to me that some people are just born with that fire inside them. They're born with, like, as kids, they're already thinking about things like an entrepreneur. And I don't know if it has something to do with, you know, something that in their developmental stages where, you know, they learn something that I really don't know the answer to that, you know? Mm. But I do know that I can spot it in my friends. You know, I can spot the ones that are stuck in a corporate environment, they feel stuck. Some people do not feel stuck in a corporate environment, but mm-hmm. I can see in some of my friends or colleagues, you know, that they do feel stuck and they constantly have very entrepreneurial ideas. Mm-hmm. And they need to be on their own. Like it's a need. And they don't even, some of them don't even know it yet. I can just see it. I'm like, they are supposed to be an entrepreneur. And I've always known it.
It's so interesting to me that it seems to be that entrepreneurs in some ways recognize each other. And in some ways, I'm not sure entrepreneurs can help but be entrepreneurs. Like eventually they'll have to.
Yes.
And yet you started young. You started in college, I understand, wanting to be a journalist to help people who didn't have a voice. And then you took a left turn at Albuquerque. What happened there? How did you go from I'm going to be a journalist to starting a record store to becoming a coach and an educator for people who want to do marketing, especially who want to do good.
So that's an interesting story too. So I took news writing in high school. I wanted to be a journalist. I took all the writing classes I could. I did that into my first year of college, and I was very set on this. Like, this was my life plan. I had been planning it for a while. I wanted to be Sarah Jessica Parker in Sex and the City, but with a little bit more like social impact style vibe. And I was just so ready to do that. And then I moved out of my parents' house, and I met this guy named Skyler who had just purchased basically the bones of a store downstairs underneath the apartment that I was living at. And he was like, hey, I'm starting, he was basically like starting this store, and we just became friends. And then eventually, like 3 months, 3 months or so into him having the store and being like, I don't know what to do, I started helping out, dating him, and running the business with him at the same time. And so we both decided, like, are we going to do this together? Yes. Okay, let's do this.
Wow.
So we kind of put our heads together, and I was like, I have all these ideas. Let's try to do some different creative things to get people in the door. It was a very niche type of store, and at the time, our city wasn't extremely economically stable either. So it was, and we're a very working class town. So I was like, how do we get people to want to come to our store? How do we get this super niche store? How do we get people in the door or walking through the door? And then we had two floods that devastated our store. There were so many obstacles. Plus I was 19 years old and he was 25, and we had no money. Like, there was no money coming in, no cash flow to the store. And we pretty much, we were both working part-time jobs. And at some point we just said, okay, let's quit our part-time jobs and just go full in on this. And so I really took the marketing side of that. I asked myself, how can we get people talking about this store? How can we build a community using our store and build up our personal brands and our leadership in the community in the process? And so, and do that with $0. So I started figuring out different ways to do that. I was designing things. I was creating posters and business cards. And we were going to several different networking events every week or every month that we probably didn't quite fit in at. And just like kind of just doing this, reach out to so many different people in so many different ways. And it was kind of like this guerrilla marketing style thing, but I saw it working. And I remember Googling one day, I'm in like my first year of college. I remember Googling, what is it that I'm doing right now? Like, what is writing words and designing things and whatever? And I came up with a major of graphic design and business. And so I was like, I changed my path completely, did some graphic design and business classes, started taking all of the classes that I could in that side of the spectrum. And I've realized this is actually what I love doing. I thought that it was journalism, but I actually love writing to change people's lives. So I feel like the writing and the copy and everything that really helped me learn how to write in a way that actually affects people or impacts people. And that helped me so much with marketing. And people started asking me in the community, like, can you do this for us? Can you help me? Can you design this for me? Can you market my business this way? So what I found was that culture shock was extremely important to me. It was definitely one of my passions, one of my greatest achievements so far in life. Also something that I did together with my husband that was really wonderful and beautiful and such a huge part of the community. But I was really searching for something that would fulfill me on a major personal level. And that's where my business, Lauren Davis Creative, came in. And that's where marketing and branding and content creation, all of that really played a part in really fulfilling my own passions and fulfilling who I was and who I needed to be in this world. And so I said, I'm going to start my own business. And so I started my own business with marketing and social media. And I can honestly say from the day I started my business in 2010, I have never, ever been without clients or been without people asking me if they can refer me, or like it just happened naturally because I really love doing what I do. And I feel like when people chase after dreams of things that they really love and they are really fulfilled by, you're always going to have, you know, good luck and, or not good luck. You're always going to have the right things coming to you at the right time.
I'm taking that in for a second. It's so wise. Absolutely. And this idea of when you love what you do, the doors open in front of you because you're loving what you're doing. I guess the question that I have then is, what about the other side of that coin? What are your thoughts when people aren't yet doing what they love, or trying to get people to figure out what they love? It sounds like you came into it by it all happening very organically. Have you had any experience with clients who you had to sort of help them reorganize almost because they weren't really focusing on the thing that was going to get them the community they wanted?
I think that sometimes people are stuck in like the what ifs. And so they feel, you know, and I understand that because I definitely have been there. I say all this stuff and I can still say that there is so much room for me to grow. Like there's so many things I haven't learned, so many ways that I still need to grow my business. Like there's so much, right? But I see that there are a lot of people, including myself, that get stuck in the what ifs. Like what if I lose this client, then what am I going to do? I'm going to have to go back to work. I'm going to have to get a part-time job. Or what if I blah, 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 blah. You could, like, worst case scenario, you know? But what happens is sometimes, and I was actually just talking to a friend about this who we're both in similar businesses. And he was talking about a client that he just really does not want to work with. And I also used to work with that client and, you know, it was just kind of creatively squelching. And we were talking about it and he said something to the point of, you know, I really need that cash flow right now. And I said, yeah, but if you were to take away the thing that is just sucking the life out of you, I bet it would open doors and open room up in your brain to be accepting of new things that are really good and that would actually creatively benefit you. And I think that, you know, we get so worried that whatever is coming next might be worse. And I have so been there. Like I'm still there with a couple situations, you know, where I think, well, it's really easy to work for this person, or it's really easy to keep saying yes to clients, but I really love coaching. And what happens is if I don't ever make the room for coaching, if I never make the room for what I love or what I'm fulfilled by to be present in my life, then I'll never achieve it and I'll never get it. And just like when, you know, it was actually when I stepped away from Culture Shock a little bit, which is the name of our store, when I stepped away from the store just a little bit, it was really hard for me. I felt sad. Like I felt like I was deserting my store that I had helped build. And even though I was never deserting it. I'm still not deserting it. I'm involved in it every step of the way, every single day, still now. But when I decided to make that mental switch for me to say, I really want to go deep on my business, and, you know, all of these different doors kind of opened for me that I would have never seen. I would have never even seen the doors. They would have just been closed. I would have never seen them cracked open a little bit if I had been focusing on something else. And I think that's the point. Like we just need to be able to see those things, and we can't see them clearly when there's something else in the way.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it's funny because that notion of keeping yourself open to what is possible by not filling up your mind, your heart, your time with things that you feel like you have to do. It's a really vulnerable position to be in. And I know I'm part of the Facebook group that you have started, the Social Media Marketing for Entrepreneurs. And there are people who talk about that in that group, that they that there's a sense of vulnerability for being out there with who they are and with what they're trying to do, because they're not sure they're ready, you know? And I'm wondering if you could comment a little bit on that, on what this made you decide to sort of start and revitalize the group. And also, what do you tell someone who feels vulnerable in that way and maybe not ready yet to embrace all that we've just been talking about?
Well, I think that there's definitely in this, especially in this personal branding space, and especially for people who are not growing up, like from, you know, being really young in this space, I think that for some people, like, you know, even my age, where I, you know, I grew up with like MySpace and Facebook came along and when I graduated high school. But I think that for some of us, it's still hard to understand that people want to hear from us, you know, because we were growing up in this age where brands were telling us what we should pay attention to or what we should buy. And so now the personal brand is out there, and the entrepreneur personal brand is a beautiful thing, and people trust personal brands. They trust people. So it's hard for some of us, including myself, but I keep doing it. So that's one thing, but it is hard for some people to say like, hey, check out what I'm doing. Isn't this cool? And, you know, I think that for some of us, we say, who would want to hear from me? Or like, what if my mom or my, you know, I mean, not in my case, but what if, you know, someone might say, what if my mom or what if my friends think I'm silly? Or what if they think that what I'm doing is stupid? Or what if, you know, my local friends don't understand what I do on a national level with marketing? What if the people who have never seen me speak think that me speaking is a fallacy? Or, you know, like there's all these different thoughts that we say in our head of why it would be hard to be vulnerable or show up as a personal brand online. But what happens is after you keep practicing and you keep doing it over and over again, it's kind of like, oh, I just hate to be so cliche, but I do. It is kind of like riding a bike or something. You know, you start riding a bike and it's hard to balance and it's hard to figure out how to do it. And then all of a sudden one day it just happens. You just actually understand how to ride a bike. And you ride a bike for the rest of your life. You like, you never think about like falling off a bike the same way again as you do when you're a little kid, and it seems so scary. And even when you stop for a while, you can still get back on, and it's just as easy to balance as it was the last time. And you just have to keep doing it and keep putting in the practice. And those little thoughts will kind of fall away. They might creep up again from time to time. You know, certainly I have those thoughts sometimes because I do so many things that it's hard for me to switch back and forth between like, who am I to my local community? Who am I to my more national audience? Who am I to the people I'm speaking to? So it's kind of hard, like, you know, to balance where all of those things fit in. But what I've realized is over time, all of the little tiny things, you know, I do try to think of the big picture, like vague, like kind of like in a vague way. But mm-hmm. over time, all of the little things I've done, like little tiny branding sessions, speaking to my Chamber of Commerce locally, then speaking to a Mike Kim workshop or coaching event, and then being on this podcast and being on this podcast and meeting these people in London at a conference, like all of these different things actually add into the big picture now. So, you know, I have this Facebook group and there's people from all different places in my life and all different time periods that have all of a sudden congregated in this Facebook group because they want to hear from me still. They still want to hear from me. And that's really special. And I think that if you can look at your personal brand and say, hey, this one connection I made right here, this one person I'm talking to might be the most important person in the world right now. That changes things later on. You're going to look at your Instagram in 5 years from now, or look at your Facebook, look at your content 5 years from now, and realize some of the same people are commenting on that post as, you know, they're commenting 5 years later, and they're still hanging on for you because they really look to you for inspiration and for advice. So I think that, I guess what I'm trying to say, I feel like I kind of got a little bit out there, but what I'm trying to say is, it's okay to bring your personal side into your business side, because people really, really do want to hear from you. They want to see who you are. They want to see your creative sphere of influence. They want to see how you impact the world with your creativity, and they need you. Like, they don't need someone else saying the same thing. They literally need you, because everyone needs, it's like when you become friends with someone and you instantly connect with someone and you're like, oh my gosh, I feel like I've known this person my whole life. And then you go and try to be friends with another person, and it's like, if you're just missing the mark so much, like you're like, yeah, that person was cool and nice and everything, and there's nothing wrong with them. I just don't think we're going to be friends for the rest of our lives. It's that kind of thing. Like, someone out there really needs to hear what you have to say from your mouth.
First, you didn't go out there. You answered exactly the question I was asking, but okay, also really in depth. So thank you for that. And yet here's the question that I always come up against, and I'm a little older than you are. You know, I'm in my 50s and I'm doing all of this social media stuff. So it's hard to know. You know, my peers, for example, are people in their 50s and 60s who are either getting close to retirement or looking for new careers after not having done it for a long time. And so someone like that, what if you don't know what to say? How do you figure out what to say to the people, like you say, who want to hear from you? How do you know that? How do you learn that? And is it different for different social media platforms? What do you do in order to be able to reach out to the people who want to hear from you in a way that they want to hear?
So the first thing I would do is start posting things that feel natural to you. So don't get so convoluted in looking up how analytics work or how different platforms work. Just kind of figure out what works well for you and be consistent about it. And then look, this is exactly the method I do for me, and then also for my clients that I work one-on-one with, is we get a consistent posting schedule. We make sure that what they're posting is authentic to them. So whether that is a story about their kids, whether that is a story about their business, I frequently, a little tip is I ask them if they're trying to figure out a way to bring their personal side into the business side of a Facebook or Instagram post, I say, or even LinkedIn, I say, ask yourself, what did I learn from this personal situation that I could apply to my business? Because in most part pieces in life, you can actually apply, you know, your everyday life and your growth to what you're doing in business. So that's one tip. But what I always say is just get kind of consistent about posting. And then after you've been consistent, no cheating, no falling off the horse, after you've been consistent, go back and look at your different posts and see what actually stood out to people that you love. There's always going to be those people that like all of your posts. That's your fan club, and they are assembled and they are ready to help you. So the thing is when you post something, anything, you're going to notice that some people are just going crazy for one post, and then some people are just, you know, one post is dead, and then one post has a medium amount, and kind of look at that content that you've posted and say, what is it about this do I think that my audience is resonating with? If my audience is looking at this post and they are self-identifying, are they finding out more about me that they like to know? Figure out what it is about that post that works really well and start altering your content to fit the different types of posts that people are really responding to. You can't, if you're wanting to be technical, you can't actually like get great traction on anything unless you really deeply understand your audience. So in that way, I would say I would dive deep into different hashtags that your audience members would be following. Try to figure out what it is that their pain points are, what kind of media they are responding to on different social media pages. Figure out what kind of content is really resonating with them, what they're self-identifying with on other people's pages, and just kind of get in the flow of creating your own content so you can actually test it and look at what makes sense for your business and your journey.
That's so fascinating. The idea of testing it and looking at it and evaluating it, that is quite frankly scary to me as someone who I that kind of analytics stuff just makes my eyes cross, and I have to really dig into it, and going into like Google Analytics and all of that, it's all stuff I'm learning, but it's not something that I'm even close to being an expert at. The interesting thing is though that it seems like different social media platforms almost require different perspectives. Like the things that I've noticed in looking at my own Instagram, the stuff that seems to work best is when my face is in it, which I think is so interesting. I'm like, I thought Instagram started as a big look at the cool picture I took platform, but it seems to have evolved into something else. And TikTok, for example, everybody's doing silly dances on TikTok, and those seem to be the things that really work well there. Something that's silly and fun and lighthearted versus LinkedIn, which seems to be about business. When you're working with a client, when you're working with a business owner or a creative business owner, what kind of things do you tell them to help them figure, because it's a morass for me, what kind of things do you tell them to help them figure out where they would maybe be best to post, and maybe some other things aren't best for them? How do you navigate all of that?
So whenever I work with a client one-on-one or when I do coaching programs, I say, you know, a lot of people will tell you, you know, be on every platform, like check out all the different platforms. And that's so overwhelming to an entrepreneur who is trying to just build their personal brand, trying to get started. And I don't agree with that. I think that there's a reason why you should, you know, hold your place on the different platforms, so that way you can control your own branding, but you don't need to go headfirst into every social media platform right away, because that will cause you to burn out immediately. So mm-hmm. What I do recommend is that you choose two platforms. You choose one platform that you have tons of fun on. So for me, my fun platform is Instagram. I love hanging out on Instagram. So if anyone wants to connect with me on Instagram, like, please message me, tell me you heard this, because I'd love to chat with you. I mean, you and I, Isolde, have had several conversations on Instagram. So
yes.
What I like to do is I love Instagram. So that's my place where I have fun. And then I say, mm-hmm. Choose another platform that is either the next best place that you can show up for your audience, or where your audience is at, or, you know, the best place where your audience is at. So for me, that's probably LinkedIn. If I were to choose two platforms for my business, it would be Instagram and LinkedIn, because I know that that's probably where my audience is. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is, once you choose the platform that you love and you get consistent about it and you start using it every day or using it a few times a week, then what happens is social media becomes a little bit more fun to you. So you have to figure out which platform seems fun to you. Just use that fun platform as your fun platform. That's the one that makes you feel like social media is fun. And then kind of take that content from that fun platform and see how you can repurpose it for the platform that is your next best step. And if you can do that, if you can kind of figure out how to repurpose it for one other platform, you'll eventually get better at figuring out how to repurpose it for more platforms.
And it's almost an exploration, it sounds like, and you explore for a little while, and if it's working for you, then you might continue. But if not, then you might go elsewhere and find if another one will be something that can work.
Yeah. And I was going to say about how you said, you know, your face shows up in a post and people like it a lot more. That is definitely because people like to see you and they want to hear from you, and seeing your face makes them happy. So when they see your face on, people say, I don't want to take a selfie. I don't want to be in a picture. I don't, you know, my hair doesn't look great, or I, you know, my skin is bad right now. But the fact that you are showing up in a picture and people are liking it is absolute proof that people want to see what you have to say. And when they're scrolling through their feed and there's hundreds of posts to scroll through on Instagram or on Facebook, they're just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And then they come across a person's friendly face, someone they know or might know through a mutual friend or know something about, and that person is holding something up or pointing to something or smiling with their beautiful smile. That really makes people stop and pay attention because they say, oh, I love this person, or I know this person, or this person is friendly. And it makes them stop and say, could I be this person? Could I do what this person is doing? Could this person teach me something? So yeah, people in posts and you showing up as authentically as you can. And that sounds so cliche when people say be authentic, but you showing up as you as possible in your posts is the absolute surefire way to build your audience, get better engagement, and just really grow your brand as a personal brand.
It's so interesting because that what you just said was exactly what my next question was going to be. And that is, what are the best practices? It sounds to me authenticity, talking about being you. And I've noticed that on Instagram, honestly, people don't seem to care whether or not my hair is askew and all over the place. That it just doesn't, that part doesn't seem to matter. Right. You know, what matters is what is it that matters on Instagram? What do you have any sort of best practices for Instagram or for LinkedIn, your two favorites?
Yeah. My best practices is I would consider myself leaning heavily towards the engagement side of Instagram. So when I say engagement, I mean, I spend way more time interacting with people on Instagram than I do posting. And the reason why is because I believe in building your audience organically, and I believe in building it without cheating. So no paying for followers or anything like that. Because what happens is I know that if I scroll through the people that follow me, I've had conversations with many of them. I might not remember, but sometimes I'll even, you know, see someone's story and I'm like, how do I know this person? And I go to my messages and I see that we've had a full conversation, you know, like 4 years ago or something like that. So, and I've actually met people through Instagram that I'm friends with now that we've hung out in different states or in different places because we met on Instagram and talked about business or talked about, you know, the challenges they're facing with marketing and that kind of stuff. My best practice would be act like you are in real life on social media. People get very caught up in like, what should I do? How do I do it right? What is the best way to do this? But the real best way is just to treat social media like you treat real life. You would never host a party at your house and then have people inside, bring them inside, say like, okay, here's the food, here's the music, and then go look out the window and pout and cry that some other people aren't there yet. You would host the people at your house. You would have fun with them. You would show them the pictures on your wall that are reflections of you and your family and your life and your beautiful experience of how you live your life. And you would have some pillows that are, you know, on the couch, maybe not perfectly, and your dog toys are still out and whatever. It's just so much fun. You're showing them music. You're playing some vinyl on a record player for them. Like, you're having fun. You're not standing there wondering why everyone is not there yet, or not all the coolest people are there yet, because the people that are in your house are the best people to you. And you should treat your followers and people that you connect with online just like that. Because if you do, they're always going to remember that. It's going to be a meaningful relationship that sticks out and sticks completely out of the normal from all of these people who are just trying to sell you something online.
Oh, absolutely. Whenever I get accept a friend request or a connection from LinkedIn, and immediately there's a hi, you want to buy this from me. Oh, it is. Yeah. It feels so. I know it sounds really bizarre saying it this way, but it feels deceptive. It feels disingenuous. They're not interested in connecting with me. They're interested in selling me something, and that's something that I tend to shy away from as a person who receives it. So I can totally understand people who are on the receiving end would do the same thing. No, I don't want to be sold to. And that's a lot of it. It's like somebody showing up with one of those perfume sprayers when you walk into a store, whether you want it or not. Yeah. They've sprayed you with perfume.
Yes, exactly.
And that's the worst for me because I have scent allergies. So, okay. Yeah. It's, I'm always like back, get away, because that will mean that I'll lose my voice if I have perfume on me. So when you're talking about this stuff with people on the Facebook group, you've got this Facebook group is so interesting because immediately upon starting it, and I don't remember if you were resuscitating one that you'd had for a while or if you just started it, but immediately there were hundreds of us going, yes, I absolutely want to be a part of that. What do you think accounts for the number of people who immediately went, absolutely, I want to be here?
I think there is a couple things. I had a group a long time ago. It had about 40 members in it, and I just didn't have a plan. I don't think you have to have everything super planned out, but I didn't have the passion behind wanting to have a Facebook group at that time. And so I think it kind of showed, like, it just wasn't really a very living Facebook group. There was a few amazing people in it that kind of kept it flowing and people commenting, but it just wasn't full of life. And I didn't really know what I was doing with it. Fast forward a few years now, I think it was like 4 years ago, I had that original Facebook group. And I just realized that I wanted a place for my platform. I wanted Facebook group to be my platform, and I wanted my podcast to be my platform. And like I was telling you before, and I was actually just talking to a friend of mine earlier today too, about this, is that all of those little things, like I think I was just saying this to you too, all of those little things throughout the last 10 years or more that I've been in business, that I've done all these little moments or these little times I've spoken or these little bits and pieces and tips that I've given people in the past, all of that accumulated in people believing that I know what I'm talking about and also having faith in me and wanting to see me succeed in life. So what happened is when I started this new Facebook group, a lot of these people, I put out two posts about it only, one post on Facebook, one post on Instagram. I didn't invite anyone to it except for a few close friends, and it just exploded. People were joining left and right. And so that's one of the reasons, is because people want to see you succeed when you're a personal brand. They want to see you moving the needle. They, especially because I have always been vulnerable and always been open with my audience about my journey, I think that they definitely feel connected to me and they want to see what I've got in store. The second reason I believe it did well is because honestly, there is so much information out there about social media and it is overwhelming, and so much of it is not based in fact, and so much of it is just hypotheticals and supposed reasons why things happen, and people are just kind of tired of it. They're like, hey, I just want people to know about my wonderful brand or my wonderful business and how I'm helping people. And I just want some no BS tips and strategies. And where can I find that? I know Lauren has a reputation for the last 10 years of showing up and not giving me, you know, BS information about social media. So I'm going to follow her. And I think that really shows that if you just keep showing up for your audience, you keep being yourself, you keep being totally true to yourself, you know, maybe it will take you way less time than it took me 10 years to start your platforms, but maybe it won't, you know, maybe you'll do that in 2 years. Maybe you will keep doing client work for a few more years. Maybe you'll do client work for 15 or 20 years and then decide you want to have your own platform. It really just boils down to what feels right for you and what feels true to you.
It's interesting. I keep saying that after everything you say, I'm like, that's so interesting, because it makes me wonder, you had a lot of people who wanted you to succeed and a lot of people who want to see what you're going to do next. And a number of people, a lot of people, I think, who are a little sick of the signal to noise ratio is really bad. Yeah. And so you're providing signal, not noise, which I think is great. And yet there's a community there already. It feels like it to me. And I, you know, it's only just a few weeks old, this particular incarnation of the group.
Yes.
So how do you do that? How do you now keep the community feeling of this group that's so new and has grown so well versus somebody who might have a group that's sort of languishing? What might somebody do to resuscitate a group or to start one that does not have that kind of community?
I think the first thing is the first advantage that I probably have is that I know a lot of people in this group already. They followed me, but I also have established these relationships with them, which is the whole basis of how I do social media. So because I established these relationships, I already know how awesome the people in this group are. And every day, even the people that I don't know that are in the group, every time someone answers a question or post something about themselves, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I have the coolest group in the world because there's like, it's just a powerhouse group in there. It's like, there's people that are influencers. There's people that are business owners. There's people that are brick and mortar business owners. There's a ton of artists in there. And I think what is really just so cool is that I have established these relationships, so I know good questions to ask them. And that's part of building your community, is knowing who your community is, knowing what questions they will respond to. But one of the big ways that I stir up engagement in that group and work on that group is just by really leaning into what I know their expertise is and what I know that they are passionate about. What I know that their actual frustrations are, you know, I want to make sure that that they're not just looking to me for advice and looking to me for the answers to everything. I want them to be able to lean on each other and build those friendships, because just like at a live event, the friendships that you make and the connections that you build and those relationships you really build are the ones that you'll remember forever. And those are the ones that form a frame around the experiences and what you're learning. And if you have those people that you can bounce things off of, you just keep growing. You'll always be growing. It's when you stop bouncing things off of others, you stop working together with other people, you stop trying to desire those relationships, that's when you'll stay stagnant.
And it sounds like that sense of community, it's an evolving, almost living, breathing thing instead of something that can be stagnant, because you have to feed it in order for it to grow, or it'll just die out.
Totally. Yes. I completely agree.
And now there's something that I know that I could keep you for another 4 hours. And I know that we can't do that, but because I love talking to you, you've got such a great perspective.
Well, thank you.
But I wanted to ask you about your focus on wanting to work with businesses that do good. What's the reason for that? And how do you go about doing it?
So a long time ago, actually a few years ago, our mutual friend Mike Kim told me about this thing called the exclusionary persona principle. And because I had a hard time saying, like, I want to work with, I had a hard time pinning down who I wanted to work with. So instead, we pinned down who I don't want to work with. And so what I decided I didn't want to work with were, you know, unpassionate people, people who are not confident in what they're doing. And that doesn't mean like, I want people that, you know, I do want to help people build their confidence. That's not the problem. I just don't want people who are completely unconfident and scatterbrained in everything that they do in life. I wanted people who have good communication issues. So I wanted to eliminate people who just cannot communicate what they desire or what they want at all. And of course, this is not the same thing as someone who desires to want to communicate better and is always getting better at communicating. That's a completely different person. I also didn't want to work with anyone who is a micromanager. And I wanted to work with people who value my time. So I decided on all of these things that, you know, these are the kinds of businesses and people that I want to do work with. And then what I started doing, and this was the hardest part, is I started eliminating people or saying no to people that I felt didn't sit within this mission. And I actually literally have, the reason why I know what those principles are is because I literally have it taped to my computer screen, because I want to make sure that when I get an email, I say yes to everyone because I want to help everyone. I want to help even the people that I have taped. Written down that I don't want to work with. I still want to help them. You know, I want to make sure that they're sure. that that they will do well in life. And but what I found was, in order for me to do well and me to do my best work, I can't work with those people. And there are some people who are like, that is their thing. They're going to work with those people because they're going to help those people. And that is the person that they want to work with. So by eliminating who I didn't want to work with, I was able to figure out that the people that I generally want to work with value the time that I spend with them. They are people who have a growth mindset. They are people who want to see good done in the world, who believe in good for all mankind, good for humanity. And so what happens is I end up, by excluding the certain principles that I don't like, I end up working with people all the time who have the best intentions and the best, most purposeful businesses for, you know, I work with them for my own happiness because it really does make me feel good. And it makes my business more purpose driven. And in that, in turn, you know, I desire to make money and to make profit so that way I can also give back to more things that I care about and be a better humanitarian in the world. And so that it all kind of works together in the cycle of who I am and how my business is.
I love that. That's so fabulous. And it sounds like it is a real cycle of the one feeds into the other, and yes, and they keep going and growing, which is great. Before I let you go, are there any resources that you can recommend? I mean, I'm going to put all of your social media in the show notes and all of that, so people can find you on Instagram and on LinkedIn and all of that. But do you have any resources that you could recommend for someone just starting out who wants to be a creative on these social media platforms?
Yeah, I have two PDFs that I would love to provide to you and to your listeners. One of them is a worksheet where you can plan out your next 12 posts for Instagram. So, you know, or for Facebook. So some of the people I talk to say, I don't know what to post. How do I know what to post? And that was a question you asked earlier. And this actually has a couple different prompts that you can use, and you can plan out several weeks of content using it, and you can repeat it over and over again. And then the other PDF is How the Algorithm on Instagram Works in 2020. So I'd love to provide you with those two PDFs. And then, of course, the best resource of all of these things is that Facebook group, which is called Understanding Social Media for Entrepreneurs. You can just literally search Understanding Social Media Marketing for Entrepreneurs in Facebook, and it will pop up. And that is, like you said, it's booming. It's so much fun. It's obviously already a community, and it's building rapidly. Make sure you answer those questions so I can approve you into the group. And that would be the best way to stay connected with me, that and Instagram.
Perfect. Thank you. And I can attest that Facebook group is fabulous. You should absolutely join it. And I thank you for those PDFs. What we'll do is we'll put your links to those on the show notes page, and that way people can go and grab those from you when they're ready. I think that would be terrific.
Cool. That's awesome. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. And I have one last question that I would like to ask you. It's a silly question, but it's one I ask everyone who's on the show.
Awesome.
And it's really simple. And it is this: if you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the entire world to see, what would you say?
I would put my Instagram handle.
I love it.
Then I can see who connected with it and see, like, if I saw someone's Instagram handle in the sky, I would definitely look it up.
That's great. That is the most unique answer I have ever received. And I've asked that question countless times. I love it.
I see. Oh, I know, man. I talked a lot about inspirational stuff today, but honestly, I'm not an inspirational, like, I'm not I don't get inspired by inspirational stuff. So if I saw a quote in the sky or something, I probably would be like, oh, that's nice. But I wouldn't. But if someone put their Instagram handle in the sky, I'd say, okay, I got to figure out what this is. Let's take a look. And maybe that's how my brain works.
It would pique your curiosity. No, I think being curious about something like that is great. And what a terrific marketing idea, you know, skywrite the Instagram handle. In the sky.
You're always fabulous. An entrepreneur.
I love it. from the day you were born. Lauren, I'm so grateful that you were on the show. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this too.
That was Lauren V. Davis, and you've got to follow her, obviously, because she is not only brilliant, she's hilarious, as you can tell. And this is Isolde Trachtenberg for the Innovative Mindset Podcast, telling you that if you like what you hear, please consider leaving a review, comment, let me know if there are other things that you want to hear about how we can lift all those boats. A rising tide lifts all boats so that we can all live more creative and fulfilling lives. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg saying, keep on breathing. Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2020. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg, and I send you all of my love.